Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. That's our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Hi! Hey!
Throw your hands up in the air. I'm Ben Bullen, joined, as always, with the inimical, the imminent, Mr. Noel Brown.
Hello. It is me. You guys know that Smashing Pumpkins song, 1979?
No. What is music?
Yeah, exactly. What even is music? Well, there's a really great meme where it's like Billy Corgan riding a roller coaster. That's the title of the meme.
Yeah,
and it's from the perspective of someone riding a roller coaster. And he goes, and we, you know, don't even care. But they just extend the we. And last thing, there's another amazing roller coaster related image of Billy Corgan. This is actually of him looking really bummed out on a roller coaster, just sitting there with, I guess, presumably his manager, looking about as crestfallen as one could be in the happiest place on earth.
Last of first things, shout out to, of course, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Roller Coaster of Love.
From the Beavis and Butthead Do America soundtrack. Excellent version of that tune.
So, folks, you're probably wondering what we're talking about in this week's series, which is an on-purpose two-parter.
Yeah.
We did it. We figured it out in advance this time. We are talking about roller coasters.
Upside down on the dip, dip, dipper.
Have you ever been just on your regular feet on the regular ground and thought, this is disappointing. Yeah. Gravity
maybe
is
there's
kind of
more.
Mid.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. What if we put ourselves in a situation where we were purposefully under duress?
Mm-hmm. What if it felt like I was dying? And it's funny because, just for a second, though,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. how cool would it be if I waited in line up to 2 hours before I had that rush? It's like, what if drugs were slower?
And then emerged from the whole experience, not dead, and we had a renewed lease on life.
And looking for your phone and your hat and your parents
limbs.
Or your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the great, noble, dare we say, universal human impetus behind roller coasters, behind seeking thrills. The modern roller coasters we know are pretty much multi-million dollar operations mm-hmm. at this point, and they're in an arms race of hyperbole. What's the tallest? What's the fastest? What's the longest? Et cetera, et cetera. But the idea of a roller coaster is nuts. I actually know a guy who works building roller coasters for amusement parks. And he told me his historical thing, he won't give us tickets. I checked. Sorry, guys. Sorry, ridiculous story.
I was super going to ask, dude.
Yeah, but he said, you know, Ben, the interesting thing about the history of roller coasters is I'm pretty sure the first ones were non-consensual. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, I feel like a lot of people just fell down hills and died. And the ones who lived were like, let's do it again.
Right. It's like the guy who first ate a mushroom and didn't die was like, you know what? That kind of is a little bit yummy. It's almost as though it has a fourth flavor. Let's call it mommy, you know? But yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like, speaking of, you know, non-consensual, I mean, the earliest roller coasters were borderline non-consensual in that, like, it was just such an unknown. People were kind of stepping consensually somewhat into an experience that one could argue is non-consensually dangerous without their knowledge, right?
Right, yeah. Right. And big thanks to Gil Chandler for the Massachusetts Department of Education, who says the modern day, like the purposefully designed thrill ride or gravity ride, goes back to the 1600s in Russia, wherein these folks would build big, high wooden ramps. They would cover them with water, knowing this water would freeze and become ice. So they were making, like, you know, luge courses almost. And they were about 2 feet wide, just enough for a small sled. And you would have to climb a ladder like you would for a water slide at a water park. The ladder was pretty high, 70 feet. And then you would sit on the sled and then somebody would come along at the top of the ladder. They push the sled onto the ramp, you would speed down to the bottom. You would safely, if everything worked out, coast to a stop along a 600-foot sort of rampway or straightaway.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like you said, if everything went well, there certainly were things. Whenever you play with gravity and don't have a series of kind of contingency plans in place, there are opportunities for things to go horribly awry. And this does kind of just remind me of, like, it's like almost just controlled sledding in a way, because even earlier than this, you know, you could argue that the early roller coasters were hills with people, you know, in these little slidey crafts known as sleighs or sleds.
Yeah, and this is the part where some like British documentarian or European documentarian, if they're going to be Herzog about it, is like, man has always found great offense in the unfair strictures of gravity. Spit in the face of God one more time upon the whirligig.
May ye slip and slide, ye way to Valhalla.
Exactly. I would love to hear more commercials for these kinds of rides phrased in that sort of high melodrama. Britannica points out that there were mechanical problems, or right, not mechanical problems, but, you know, there were areas of opportunity, as HR would call them, because once the sled goes all the way down very quickly, somebody's got to haul it all the way back up.
Right. I mean, I guess in sciencey terms, this is what you might call a simple machine. Right. It's about as simple as it gets. And maybe they could have employed another simple machine, the pulley and rope would have really been helpful in hauling that thing back up. And we're going to see a lot of simple machines in modern coasters, like the wire that literally hauls the coaster, or the chain that hauls the coaster up that incline.
Oh, before that it drops. Noise. Max, exactly. Can we get that noise?
The chain there lift, I believe, is what it's called. We'll get to the terms. But to me, guys, I don't know about y'all. That's the scariest part of the entire coaster is the crawl towards death. And then once you're in it, it's so fast and furious, part two, that it's, you don't even have a chance to be scared. You're just screaming for out of sheer joy and excitement.
I argue there's a purposeful psychological aspect to that in modern roller coasters, because you could mute that sound now, but the of the slow upward climb gives you just enough time in a relatively short experience to think, was this a mistake?
Right. It's like the sound of the chamber rotating in a good old wholesome game of Russian roulette.
I knew you, how did I know you were going to say that?
Without that click, 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 not nearly as scary.
You're right. That's another kind of roller coaster.
It is.
I don't want to say that on air. But people, if we go back to Gil Chandler, he notes that people in big cities and rural villages alike all dug these things that they would call ice slides. They were built in public parks. Some really fancy aristocrats had them because, again, this is pre-Russian Revolution. And some of them even had lanterns so you could slide around at night.
A good night slide. Who doesn't love that?
Yeah.
You got to imagine, too, that some of these were probably pretty ostentatious and incorporated like ice sculpture-y, you know, into these like winter wonderlands. I don't have this, you know, on authority, but I can only imagine that certain of the higher muckety mucks of the time would have insisted on these kind of ostentatious flourishes.
Of course, these guys probably had like Siberian garden gnomes and stuff, you know what I mean? Or garden hermits.
Excuse us.
So the we do know that they understood the elementary physics that informed most roller coasters a long time ago. If you look at a ride in St. Petersburg in 1784, you see that they had these carriages and grooved tracks that traveled up and down small hills, all riding off the power generated by the height and slope of that first descent, which is why the first hill is usually the largest in old school coasters.
Isn't it interesting how Soviets have a history of innovation, but also not the best safety track record? And a lot of that has to do with just jumping right into innovation without really thinking about how it might potentially hurt people.
Yeah, 100%, man.
Shade necessarily. Maybe mild shade, I guess, but it's true of even electronics. Like they're known for really interesting early innovations in consumer electronics, but also in a lot of like manufacturing flaws and problems in scale.
And the space race echoed those same lessons. It's a big plot point, in fact, in a story we did for fantastic fiction anthology called The Passage, in which J. Edgar Hoover talks at perhaps problematic length about the Russian approach to progress, which is historically throwing bodies at the problem. Sorry, Russian listeners, Russian ridiculous historians, that is just historically true. This is part of the reason why roller coasters are so awesome to bring it back home. The first quote unquote roller coaster didn't emerge until the early 1800s. And it was a French builder who bought what they called the Russian Mountains to Paris. And the problem was the climate is very different. Russia is colder than France. And so ice didn't freeze as well. So the French quickly realized it was kind of sad at first. It was like, you know, when a little bit of snow falls and people try to sled on the snow flurry and they just get like stuck in the mud. It was like
that. Or someone trying to make a snow angel in dirty, melty snow. It's literally just someone rolling around in wet mud. It's really sad.
Which again is a perfect opportunity for our melodramatic European narrator, right?
It's like, oh, absolutely.
Observe seeking angels in the filth.
Yes, and finding only devils.
So the filthy devils. So French, I love this vibe we're getting. So French, the French engineers said, okay, if we can't count on the ice, which we cannot even back then we'll make these rollers, these wooden rollers, and we'll still use sleds, but our sleds will reliably roll upon these wooden contraptions. This is the origin of the term roller coaster.
Totally. And by the way, Ben, I find ice in general to be quite fickle. It's so changeable. You know?
Yeah.
That was a really bad science joke, you know, because it can change states.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm gonna stay. I'm not leaving.
No, you should keep it. Okay. And you can't leave.
I'm staying.
I'm gonna talk more about
roller coasters with you guys. Yeah, it's rolling at this point, no longer sliding.
Right. And they still don't quite look like the modern roller coasters. They're definitely not safe. Because, you know, full disclosure, folks, Max, Noel, and I, we're dudes, which means at some point we were dumb kids, which means we did a lot of like jackass level stunts in our childhood. Like, oh, what if we do jump off this bridge?
we might still do that stuff.
All right. All
guys, right. I think you might have me beat on that. I was a little more of a timid child. I was afraid of climbing trees. But y'all, I'm sure you guys did some gnarly stuff, and I look forward to hearing about it peppered throughout this episode. I will say, though, as far as roller coasters are concerned, I don't know if this is y'all's experience, but I have to almost earn back my ability to not be scared of riding them. Like, I will have a period where I don't ride a roller coaster for a long time. Then I go to an amusement park, and it takes me a minute, a couple of times walking around the park before I can be tough enough to ride the thing.
You gotta warm up to it.
I gotta warm up to it. It's not like riding a bike. It doesn't just come back to you immediately. I sort of regain my fear of death at the hands of these, you know, metal machines. And then kind of gradually by watching little kids riding them and mainly just not wanting to be embarrassed by being the only one that waits behind while everyone rides the ride and then has to sheepishly kind of join them at the other side.
I'll be honest, to me, roller coasters have always been kind of like like ice cream is a weirdly good comparison. If it's around, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
But I rarely wake up and say, let me travel to some place to get ice cream or
not what you'd call a coaster head. And I think at a certain point in this episode, we're going to talk about some that we quite enjoy. But first, we've got more history to get through, don't we?
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. Okay, so safety measures. First off, not a thing.
Non-existent.
In the early days. The injuries that passengers got were actually the best marketing for these rides, because people would come up to each other in Paris and say something like, you know, Jacques rode one of the Russian mountains, and they say he'll never regain full use of his left arm. And people are like, what? I gotta go.
Yes. Gabrielle lost a finger.
Well, that's classic Gabrielle. I know. Let's get on this thing. So
she can't have many left at this point.
Right. So in 1817, the Belleville Mountains and the Aerial Walks in Paris started adding some safety things. They added wheels that would lock, continuous tracks, and eventually they beat that first problem we were talking about, returning the car. So they had cables that would hoist the car to back to the top of the hill. So you didn't have to have people pushing it. They finally did that pulley that you're talking about. They still have not made a continuous circle track yet.
Well, and if anything, this is just going to increase their yield, you know, or their take, right? Because they can have more rides
per hour,
you know,
per day,
and not having to pull the thing up by hand. And again, Ben, where is this kind of in the trajectory of like the history of the automobile?
This is pre-automobile.
Yeah. Exactly.
Very much so. Yeah.
And we know even the early automobiles didn't really have very many safety features. So in a lot of ways, it's not like they actively didn't want to have safety features. It's just like technologically, they kind of hadn't really, you know, cracked it yet.
I mean, I think one thing that's really interesting is, and this is something I didn't know when I was starting the research, it's like parallel time with the train, the locomotive.
Very much so. Yeah.
Well, which would have had things like locking wheels, which would have had, and especially on a track, absolutely makes sense, Max, that there's that parallel between a tracked train and a coaster. Yeah.
And it's
right.
Interesting because they're kind of advancing, I mean, train much more than the roller coaster.
That's what I'm thinking.
Advancing the ball together in some ways.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because surely early trains didn't have those locking wheels either, or like some of the safety mechanisms. And that's why there were so many train derailments and horrific accidents, right?
I'm sure at some point late in a night, a Parisian engineer was speculating whether or not you could make a coal-powered roller coaster. However, we know that the idea of train cars comes in here, especially in the United States. If we go to some great work by American Experience, we see this sort of parallel advancement that you're referencing, Max.
That's right. American Experience goes on to say, when the proprietors of Mauch-Chunk Railway in eastern Pennsylvania began operations in the 1820s, their mission was not entertainment, but coal mining. And their first passengers were mules herded into a train laden with coal. These lucky beasts coasted from the top of Mount Pisgah down to a canal, then hauled the train back up for another go. Considering this task, I don't know if I'd call them lucky. And then by 1844, there had been a return track lay. And you know what it makes me think of too? Those little two-person mining carts where you kind of seesaw, you know, in order to like propel the cart, you know, on a train track. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff really is, I've never thought about this, Max, but the parallels between the technology advancements of the locomotive absolutely parallel that of the roller coaster, only with much lower stakes, one would argue.
Well, how I don't know. The financial stakes are high on the trains, but people.
I mean,
can
no,
still
the
buy.
Lower on the roller coasters.
Lower stakes
in terms of like, you know, how much loss could be accrued by a derailment or an accident. Every human life is important. Every one of Gabrielle's fingers important for some task. But, you know, this is like, I don't think there were as many eyes on the safety track record of these early roller coasters as there were maybe on the you know, the entire railway system at large.
Regulatory bodies did not exist the way they exist today. By 1844, there had been a return track constructed for this Mauch-Chunk Railway, and this removed the need for the mules entirely. They dubbed this first system the Switchback. And to our friends at Britannica, thanks again for tuning in to our Britannica episode. To our friends at Britannica, this shows that the rail line was daring, and it was, again, entirely for mining coal. This was a huge improvement.
So it is a circular track at this point, or is a whole other route going maybe not up the steepest part of the mountain? I'm asking.
Max is orchestrating. Max, you want
to... So it's basically a straight down on one part, and then it kind of goes around in a chill path. So the train, it's like the train couldn't, on its own power, couldn't get up the hill, it sounds like. So that's why they needed the mules. But so, yeah, now it's a circular track the entire way, so you could you know, ride it if you wanted to.
If you wanted to, as surely some people did, but they were at work. They might not have been having the best day. They certainly weren't paying money to ride it. This thing was pretty long. The journey downhill is 9 miles. So they would load up as many as 14 very heavy cars. We're talking like each car having 50,000 pounds of coal. And then it would go down the mountain under... with one guy who literally has one brake lever and is just thinking, my timing's impeccable.
Well, and it would again be the same kind of brake levers you see whenever there's maybe a damsel tied to the railroad tracks. And it's like you can't just yank it or the whole thing's going to just, and all the cars are going to become smashed or whatever. You have to gradually engage it, you know, so you're slowly losing speed instead of like, because otherwise everyone would just slam into the front of the car and break their necks.
And eventually the promise of danger lured in paying passengers. Coal was still hauled in the morning, but it's kind of, it reminds me of the story of Hidden Valley Ranch dressing, where they started a dude ranch, but people increasingly just traveled there to get the condiment ranch dressing. So now people are increasingly showing up in the afternoon to pay, sources differ, but to pay something around like 50 cents per ride just to go down that incline.
How'd you get up in the first place? You would be hauled up. Yeah, you'd be hauled up by the mules, presumably, up the gentler, you know.
How did the passengers get there?
Yeah, how would the passengers have gotten up there?
I think the up part was probably the more accessible part. I think what they were doing is because they mined the coal at the top, and they went down, and that's where I guess where they processed the coal. I don't know. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, I guess I'm wondering if they had to walk up the mountain by foot and then ride the cart down the mountain, or if they were actually, because see, I'm confused a little bit about how
it's a continuous track.
No, I see, but I guess I'm asking is when they're coming down from the top, there's obviously no mule, and there's enough momentum generated by that.
The mules are out of the picture.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah, so there's enough momentum generated by that for it to make the downward slope and then just continue back up of its own volition.
It goes around the switchback, the more level thing. And it's also, you know, you have the train there, so the train will pull it the rest of the way.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you.
Now, if I could, I wanted to do an inflation calculator to give everybody a sense of this. So 50 cents in 1844 is the equivalent of...
a lot of money. $10? $20?
$20.82.
Per ride.
So it's affordable, but it's still a lot.
Well, I mean, nowadays you'd pay for the privilege of going into an amusement park where you can actually ride stuff without having to use tickets. Probably $50 is going to be the minimum.
It's still one of the big problems I have with the coolest thing at Six Flags here in Georgia for a long time, laser tag. You pay, you get in the park, and then laser tag costs more money.
Extra, yeah.
It's just not cool. I appreciate Max rolling his eyes there. You've been there too, huh, bro?
I love laser tag. I miss it. I haven't played it in years, and I would love to. Don't they do it at Andretti's, that place out in the burbs here that does like go-kart racing? I think they also have laser tag.
Yeah, laser tag is awesome. Six Flags sucks.
Well, okay, now I disagree.
Cedar Fair all day. Go to Cedar Fair Park.
I don't know about that. Okay, I'll check it out.
I'll go if I'm near it. Yeah, but I'm more like 20 minutes of hot air balloons.
Well, turns out, we'll talk about this later, there's another park in Atlanta.
Oh, is that right? Okay, well, save it. This is awesome. I was just going to say, by the way, guys, I haven't been to Six Flags in at least over a year, but I still pay my monthly subscription fee. That's about $14. It's so little that I barely notice it, but I am just filling the coffers of Six Flags coasters given in return.
And look, when I say that I'm getting a pilot license and I want to ride hot air balloons, I'm not at all disparaging roller coasters. We all seek our flirtations with death in our own manner. In our own choosing, right? So we wish you luck on yours. We also know that given the mining history of roller coasters, you might not be surprised to learn that enjoyment for the passengers was a side business for these guys. It was not their primary priority. So as mines expand throughout nearby mountains, this switchback thing eventually becomes less and less useful. And they say, look, we are not making money with this thing as a mining implement or as a mining process. So let's just turn it into a tourist attraction. This is the first scenic railway. Scenic railways have been a thing for a long time. You can still ride scenic railways in various parts of the Southeast for sure. There's still several in Tennessee. And some of them were pretty rough. I remember at one time there was a scenic railway, I want to say in East Tennessee, where while you were on the ride, part of the ride was being attacked by quote unquote Indians. And these guys dressed up as indigenous people would come on and like haunted house hassle you. Thankfully, that doesn't happen anymore. But with this first scenic railway, you would the ride would start at 5 or 10 miles an hour. And as a passenger, you are able to look at the Poconos and then you see a panoramic open quarry, a burning mine that had been on fire since 1832. Nice to visit. Don't want to live there. And then by the time you hit this thing they call the home stretch, the ride was 65 miles an hour. So it's picking up speed the entire time.
That's right. That's huge at this point, right? That's like, I mean, man, unbelievably fast. I mean, these are speeds as yet perhaps unexperienced, right, by humans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely not a normal person's day to go 65 miles an hour in the 1800s. At the peak of its popularity, this scenic railway carries something like 35,000 passengers a year. There were special trains run to accommodate the tourist and the enthusiast. The more intentional roller coasters follow after this. They echo this. And it all goes back to 1872, a guy named J.G. Taylor from Baltimore. He is, if you played that game, Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Tycoon!
Yeah, I love that game. Sir. It's so fun. This guy is kind of like a would-be roller coaster tycoon.
Couldn't you build them real dangerous on purpose and stuff like that? Wasn't that sort of part of the fun of that game?
Yes. Yeah. As long as losses are acceptable or within an acceptable margin, you can win the game. This guy, J.G. Taylor, he submits.
How come all tycoons have an initial? I just want to ask. You got to be J.G., you know, or whatever. J.K. That's such a tycoon thing to do. Sorry, please carry on.
Oh, this guy, a Baltimore native, J.G. Taylor, submits what was likely the first patent for roller coaster. People debate it, but he called it improvement in inclined railways.
Yeah, it does strike me as a thing that would be a little tricky to patent, like all in, right? Because, I mean, no one owns gravity, right? No one owns the manipulation of gravity with wheels. So I imagine you could patent a roller coaster design, you know, for the way, or a particular type of mechanic that like hauled you up and dropped you down or whatever it might be, perhaps even like a type of means of distributing electricity. But can't imagine one could fully own the concept of a roller coaster. So what happens here?
Well, after that, there's a patent in 1878 by a guy named Richard Knudsen. He's in Brooklyn. He's a Brooklyn kid. And his invention, to your point about specifying the mechanics or the construction of the thing, that's what he does. His invention is two parallel sets of tracks, each of which progresses from some height down to ground level, and the car descends one set of tracks and then it's raised by a lift to the top of the other set of tracks. So it goes back and forth all day. It's a pretty small operation, the way he's picturing it. It carries about four people at a time, and he never actually built it, but he called it the inclined plane railway.
Simple machine.
P-L-A-N-E.
The inclined plane. AKA the ramp. Yeah, exactly. And you know, obviously this is the kind of thing where you can try to patent it. You could do that, but it's so easy for it to make one little change. And then all of a sudden it's kind of its own thing. And that's how you get around
this
it.
This one carries five people and so on.
Can you patent the wind, Ben?
Can you paint with all the colors of it?
I can paint with most of them. One that it just continues to elude me.
So we have to continue the story with a guy named LaMarcus Adna Thompson.
I love a LaMarcus.
I knew a LaMarcus.
That means the Marcus.
Yes, yes. By the end of the 1800s, these American trolley companies were in on the game. They were right. building amusement parks at the very end, the terminus point of their lines, to attract people looking for amusements. You know, you're courting, you're out on a date.
Weekenders.
Yes. You're taking Jeez. The kids out. This trolley terminus thing, the most famous is probably Coney Island in New York City. Have you guys been to Coney Island?
Dude, I love it. I've ridden the Wonder Wheel, a couple of, one coaster, I think. It wasn't a crazy one. It was maybe like a sort of a smaller one, but the Wonder Wheel is classic. And I just love the vibes, man. It's just, it makes you feel like you're stepping into history. A lot of interesting Americana history in that place. You can feel it.
Yeah. Coney Island was the place to be for quite a long time. It also became home to several theme parks that were in competition. So, like, if you enjoy amusement parks, folks, imagine it similar to, every town or every big city has a couple of roads that are just filled with dealerships. Car dealerships, and they're like right next to each other, right across the street from each other. Coney Island was doing this with amusement parks for a while, or theme parks.
I think even to this day, there's two. There's like Luna Park, and then there's the other one that's sort of across the way, and they still somewhat compete, even though it all just feels like Coney Island. And it's very likely that you'll do both because neither of them are like particularly massive.
And they have the hot dog eating contest.
Which I've never seen personally, but I do love a hot dog.
I want to attend in person.
Yeah. I would think it would be a lot of fun.
So Coney Island has a lot of their stuff is inspired by the World Columbian Exposition in Chicago in 1893. Mm. Also check out The Devil in the White City, a fantastic book about the exposition and the serial killer H.H. Holmes. Just going to throw that in there. Thanks, Max. They popularize the hot dog as American food, you know, the Frankfurter, a European invention. Anyway, into this milieu strolls LaMarcus Adna Thompson. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
He is considered, and what a cool street name is this, what a cool honorific, he is considered the father of the gravity.
The father of the gravity?
Yes, yes.
Not just gravity. Okay, well, I mean, at least
the gravity is like a, you know, a roller coaster.
It's like the knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry, it's really easy to take that as like, I am God, the father of gravity. Right. Yes.
For spiritual people, yeah, God is the actual father of gravity, or the actual creator of gravity, but the gravity is different. This guy has a weird description in the American experience. He is called, quote, a Sunday school teacher and dime store moralist. He thinks...
I thought you were going to say moron. That would have been funny.
I don't even know what a dime store moron would be, but like he looks at amusement parks and he's one of those shake your fist at the sky. I hate the stuff the kids like. And he says, these amusement parks are sinful. They need redemption. But still, his switchback railway gets built in Coney.
Well, bro, I mean, think about it. I can imagine that some purists at the time or puritanical folks would take great issue with the idea of cheating gravity.
Right.
Because that is not what God intended. God intended for us to have our 2 feet on the earth, you know, not to be flying around willy and or nilly in the sky on these metal monstrosities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is the thing. It's like I picture LaMarcus Thompson saying privately to himself in the night, oh, the delicious forbidden pleasure to deny the gravities of God, if only for a moment. Anyway, he does make this thing that is called the gravity pleasure ride. And off air several weeks ago, we were all talking in one of our many group threads about whether the term gravity pleasure ride is inherently dirty.
It sounds like hand stuff to me. I don't know.
There we go.
It does. Sorry.
It was based on Knudsen's system from Brooklyn, and this switchback railway quickly earned, like, they charge people a nickel a ride. And in just a few hours, like per day, they make $600.
Now that's a big, that's a pretty steep discount from the railroad system. Yeah, 50 cents, right? Well, it varies. Yeah, but I mean, that's pretty wild. I think the deal is it's so centrally located that they're just turning over riders, and this thing is easily, you know, reloaded over and over and over and over again every hour on the hour. So yeah, what would you say, Ben? They're making about $600, $650 a day.
$600 a day. Yeah, a nickel a pop per passenger. So in like 3 weeks, this entire contraption pays for itself, but it's not what you would think of as a modern roller coaster or even a scenic railway. It's got a top speed of about 6 miles an hour. And it's kind of, you know how a lot of theme parks will have the sort of introductory, quote unquote, for kids roller coaster, right? Like Six Flags Over Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The little inchworm or whatever. Thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No loop-de-loops.
No.
Got a couple hard turns. So that's what this thing is. However, it made a lot of money, and this dime store moralist, which is still a confusing term to me. He says, okay, well, surely God doesn't want me to be poor, so I'm going to go all in on this roller coaster.
That sounds like some prosperity gospel stuff,
right?
And the American Experience goes on saying that was all the encouragement Thompson needed to apply his ingenuity to its fullest for his Orient scenic railway in Atlantic City. I just could never get over that the exoticism of all the use of that term. You still sure. see it sometimes today.
Yeah.
And you'll even go to like kind of, you know, traveling carnivals. You know, that go from town to town, and you can see some remnants of this kind of stuff in some of these like airbrushed, you know, these collapsible rides and whirly gigs.
I gotta say this, I remember being a kid, like elementary school, and you know, it's a minute since then, and when it was like a standardized testing, and one of the choices for like race was Orient, and I didn't know what that was, but this is
oh boy,
you know, 90s, and I remember asking my parents that, and they're like, yeah, don't use that term. Don't use that one.
I remember my parents telling me always put other.
And for some reason, yeah. though, the only area where it seems I still would not argue appropriate, but really common is with rugs.
Right.
You still see them all over the place as Oriental rugs. And I just don't understand how that sort of made it, you know, to still be around as prominently as it is.
It's kind of like when you're walking around different parts of New York and you still see the double headed, fire hose faucets, and they say this is a Siamese faucet or a Siamese pump. I take pictures of those with my girlfriend whenever we're traveling out there because her family is from Thailand. But anyway, yes, language is weird. This is an older legacy thing. It is a bad name, all agreed. Our boy LaMarcus discovers, okay, American Experience does another phrase that I think is weird here. They say, LaMarcus rediscovered the French trick of pulling the cars up the first hill by cable. And I love the vague mystery of, oh, the French trick.
Yes.
You know,
is that also hand stuff?
Yeah.
What is the French trick along with the gravity pleasure ride? We are really getting steamy here, folks. Mm-hmm.
So he also did a couple other, I saw that hand signal, Max. He also did a couple of other innovations, we could say mechanical innovations. He makes these triggers under the tracks that can stop the ride if something goes
like
wrong.
Like a kill switch.
An
almost,
emergency
you know?
Cable. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. Like, you know, if you've been on some older train, sometimes they'll have a cable at the top that you can pull.
Sure.
Where, beat me here, Max, where like the oh shit handle is in a passenger car.
Sure. Or even on a treadmill where there's a big red button in case things get out of hand. You can just slam that big red button and it'll cause the whole thing to come screeching to a halt.
He also built tunnels. So you would be riding all of a sudden, boom, you're in darkness, right? And by 1888, this guy has become an actual roller coaster tycoon. He's like, take that. You patent nerds of previous years. I've actually built the thing. I've built like 50, I think, 50 roller coasters across Europe and America. He had 30 patents in his own right. The guy's a beast.
This is an opportunity here for a quick discussion. I'm curious about what you guys think. Like, obviously, in theory, something on paper, you know, that's been approved for construction, everything should be able to be planned out to the last detail with tolerances within a certain level of acceptability, etc., especially in modern times. But back then, don't you think that sometimes you had to build the thing to even figure out what the problem might be? Like, could you plan everything within levels of perfection just on paper?
You need both is the thing, which is why, you know, going back to our model train episode, that's why they had to build model trains after they had figured it out on paper, right? So they could, before they, you know, plunge into building a full-size, very expensive contraption. One of the things that happens on the way to his tycoonhood is that we see our boy LaMarcus gets this, I would say, gets to a crossroad about some of his highfalutin ethics of what should or shouldn't be fun. And he monetizes some scenic views from the Bible in a ride called Dragon's Gorge. This is incredibly influential. There's a lot of elaborate scenery now, right? Like previously, you would just build these things maybe around a nice natural vista, but now they're actually building the scenery through which the ride occurs.
100%, which is like part of the attraction at this point, where you're almost like you're being transported into like a magical world, you know, where there's like things to look at along the way. And then obviously, you know, if you look at Disney, this would go on to extend even into the lines, you know, waiting in lines, having these themed attractions, which I'm not going to lie, man. Part of what I really enjoyed about going to Disney World as an adult was waiting in the lines. There's a lot of cool stuff to look at as you progress through those queues. You know, it's like being in a transported into this kind of world where every detail is paid attention to.
I love the immersive environment. I'm all about that kind of stuff. I will say that as a child being kind of like forced to go into roller coasters, I actually almost died on a roller coaster in childhood. We'll get to that part too. For me, sometimes, like if you're a kid and you're going to take a scary ride like Space Mountain at Disneyland, waiting in the line is sort of a longer version of that.
Oh my God, you're right. And I have to say, I distinctly remember being absolutely terrified by Space Mountain when I was a kid. And when I just went, you know, a few years ago as an adult, I didn't find it boring or anything, but I found it a little tame, you know?
Yeah. But when you're a kid, it's like there's a lot of it is dark.
It's in the dark is the scariest part. Yeah, no, for sure. No question about it.
I found it terrifying as an adult because I'm like, oh, my God, this thing feels like it's about to fall apart.
That's true.
No one dies at Disney, guys.
No. They get trundled off site where they officially are declared dead. That's not entirely true. It's sort of true. I don't know. Topic for another day. Or check out our episode on stuff they don't want you to know about.
Right. And at this point, we are still kind of in line for the ride. There are a lot of things that are going to go down in episode 2 of Ridiculous History Roller Coasters, which is maybe when we return in part 2, we'll study the arms race that occurs when everybody figures out people are super into feeling like they might die for about 2 minutes. With that, thank you, as always, to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams, also a research associate for this episode. Let's see, Noel, our credits get longer and longer, which I absolutely love. Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. Do you think he likes roller coasters? We should ask him.
I know he likes Disney, but that's the thing about Disney. It's not very roller coaster heavy. They've got this new, they've been leaning more into the thrill rides lately, it seems like, but in general, it hasn't been their primary focus. They've got this new Tron ride, which seems incredible, though. And the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, which is also partially in the dark, is a coaster, and it's indoor, and it's really, really cool, too.
Jonathan seems like a type of dude who likes the line. Like, he waits in the line, he gets to the front.
He likes the vibes.
Yeah. The line is the ride. Amazing.
It's all about the journey, guys. It's about the journey and the food. They have really cool, interesting, eclectic food at Disney as well.
Sure.
I actually look forward to going back. So thanks to Jonathan. AJ Bahamas. I don't know if he doesn't strike me as a coaster guy, but unless he was doing a deep dive where he only traveled by roller coaster.
Yeah, the year of traveling by coaster, exactly. Which he would do. Also, thanks to Eve's Jeffcoat, who will be, spoiler, returning soon. Thanks to our fellow Ben Thompson, Badass of the Week. Check that out. Thanks also.
We're recording with him this week, I believe.
Yeah. He's spoilers. On the way as well. Yeah, spoilers. And let's see. And also, you know, thanks to you, Noel.
Ah, Ben, I'll take it. Thanks to you as well. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.